From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. I'm really excited to be bringing this podcast to you today in partnership with Wild Foods. I'll tell you more about them later, and you can find out more and get your discount link in the show notes at ketowomanpodcast.com/105. This is episode number 105, and this week's extraordinary woman is Terry Lance. Terry has been keto for over 3 years and paleo for 2 before that. She struggled with being overweight or obese from age 7 until about 5 years ago and tried all types of weight loss plans and diets throughout most of her adult life. Diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in her early 30s, Terry was prescribed many medications, typically taking 3 for diabetes, a statin and an ACE inhibitor. She no longer takes any prescriptions and no longer has any biomarkers of type 2 diabetes. Terry was a middle school English teacher at the start of her career, then went back to grad school and earned her PhD in counselling psychology. She was then a psychologist in private practice for over 13 years. Terry is now a coach with IDM's The Fasting Method. She is the director of retreat development and has hosted 2 fasting retreats in Hawaii. This is another 2-parter, but planned from the outset this time. In this first part, Terry shares her story and how she came to work for IDM. You will probably realise pretty quickly that Terry and I are great pals. I've been nagging her to come on the podcast for ages, so I was really happy and lucky that she took some time out in the midst of her move to San Diego to record with me. We have a lot in common, including sometimes naughty dogs. You won't hear it because he managed to time it when Terry was speaking instead of me, but Rocket was pretty vocal a few times during our chat. What would we do without them though, eh? I hope you enjoy our chat and cuddles with your own dog wherever you are if you have one. Welcome, Terry, to the Keto Woman podcast. I have finally got you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Daisy. Thanks for having me here.
I'm so excited to be recording with you.
I am too, and I know it has taken a long time for us to make this happen. So thank you so much for everything.
So tell us a little bit about Hawaii. I know you've had a very stressful time the last week or two moving from Hawaii to San Diego, but it must have been quite an adventure being in Hawaii, and I'm guessing you've taken a lot away from your time there.
It was a great experience. I lived there just a little under a year, and it was just a great time of self-reflection and growth and some spiritual journey and seeing beautiful, beautiful scenery, and the people there are so amazing. But it was also full of a lot of challenges. And the one that always makes me kind of laugh is that here I am, this person who eats keto, does fasting, and I actually lived on an organic fruit farm. So the irony was pretty funny. Lots of challenges as well as lots of amazing experiences. And the biggest challenge really is that things are really a little bit behind in time there. So technology, but the benefit of all of that is that life just comes at a different pace. There's not all this hustle and bustle. People are not in a hurry. People are very, you know, take time for family and take time for each other, and very social. And just again, like I said, some of the like rudeness you might experience in other places. If I took forever to pull out of a parking spot, people would just wait and wave and not be, you know, swearing at me. So it was just a really nice, different change of pace of how people approach things. So lots of great memories and great experiences there.
And of course, you also ended up with a new furry friend.
I did.
You're a bit like me. You can't last too long before adopting somebody else.
Yeah. So one of my great mementos of my time in Hawaii is a dog that I adopted in March. Adopted him from the Humane Society. So he is a piece of Hawaii that will be with me. We just moved off the island the other day, and so this is his first time on the mainland. So he is a Hawaiian dog here on the U.S. mainland now.
And did you figure out, you were trying to work out what kind of breed he was? I think you put a post up saying you figured there was quite a lot of Basenji in there. He does look very like it.
He does look like it. And from some of the descriptions I read, he sounds like it. He's very smart. He's very playful. He's very energetic. But originally on the paperwork, it said that he was some type of mix of a pit, but he also has very much shepherd look in him. He's got the ears of a shepherd. Eventually, now that we're here, I'll probably do the genetic testing just to find out what they say. I'll probably find out he's a Great Dane Chihuahua mix or something.
I've always been tempted to do that with Amy. Rocket is just pure Potenko. And when you look it up, that's just exactly what he is. She's a cross. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to know what else is in there. Because it's fascinating, isn't it? Looking at them, trying to figure it out. But I guess to a certain extent, sometimes you can tell from the local area what kind of dogs are there, mm-hmm. and pick it up from that. I don't know if that's the case in Hawaii. I don't know if maybe so many different breeds have come in that it's not possible to work it out that way.
The reality is, except for like small breeds, like my other dog is a Shih Tzu mix, those are not really kind of common there, except for those people like me who brought them in. But most of the dogs actually born on the island or kind of more naturally there. A lot of, I can't think of the name of it. They're some type of a hound. So there's a lot of hunting dogs there, hunting wild pigs. Oh, I wish I could think of the name of that breed. But a lot of pit mixes. So a lot of people using pits for protection and guarding their homes and property and things. So that's a very common, you know, every dog you see there has some portion of one of those two breeds in them.
Oh, interesting.
Very common. The breeder or border trainer that I talked to, she said that Basenjis are very rare there. So she said she would be surprised, but he does look so much like one.
He does really look like it. That's why that question came into my head, you know, are there other Basenjis on Hawaii? Because if there aren't, it would kind of not make much sense that he had that mix in there. But you never know, do you?
That's right.
You never know who his parents,
that's right,
which parents have got together.
But he's named after a tree that is very common in Hawaii. It's a beautiful wood that comes from the tree. While we were moving here on the plane ride, I sat next to an older gentleman whose son owns a ranch on Hawaii. He harvests these trees, and they're koa trees. And so my dog's name is Koa. So he has a name after a Hawaiian or a tree that is very common on Hawaii.
I remember you trying to think of a suitable Hawaiian name.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a brief stay really in Hawaii. You're back on the mainland now. Tell me a bit about you, your story, how you got to where you are today. Before we hear more from Terry, I want to just take a moment to talk about Wild Foods. Wild Foods is a food company that puts quality, sustainability, and health first in all their products. They have everything from coffee to fish oil, and every single product is painstakingly sourced from small farms around the globe. They take their mission seriously to fix the broken food system and believe real food is medicine. They've partnered with me to give you an exclusive discount. So use the code KETOWOMAN12 for 12% off your order at wildfoods.co. I have a box full of goodies that I'm going to unbox on a live in my Facebook group this weekend, and I'll upload the video to YouTube afterwards in case you miss it. Oh, I nearly forgot, and how could I forget? They've also given me a $100 gift voucher for one of you lucky lovelies. To get your chance to win, just click the Wild Foods giveaway link on the website links page at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. I'll put a link in the show notes and it will pop up in social media posts during the week, so keep your eyes peeled. Good luck and thank you to Wild Foods for supporting me and this podcast. Let's get back to Terry.
Well, I'm originally from Michigan. I grew up kind of in a rural setting. I always struggle saying that word, rural. And did all of my schooling in Michigan, spent most of my adult life living in Ohio. So I'm a Midwest person. And then obviously just recently moved to Hawaii, and now I'm in San Diego. From a kind of health perspective and kind of relating to keto and fasting, I was overweight most of my life. I would say probably from about the age of 7 on. If I look back and look at pictures, I can kind of put a time frame on it. It was probably about age 7, started gaining weight. And both my parents are very thin. And early on, both my brother and I were overweight. And then my sister, not until later. But, you know, we were three kind of large kids with two very thin parents. I would say ate pretty horribly in the 70s and 80s, lots of processed foods and things.
With hindsight, what do you put that down to? Because it sounds like there was probably something in the genetics, probably something in the environment, but because it was all you siblings were the same, but the parents were so different. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting, you know, how did you get that way when it's so different
in
the two generations?
You know, I think sometimes when I look at it, I think of some folks who struggle with their weight also come from parents who were struggling with their weight. Mm. And so you can just kind of attribute it. Either there's something kind of genetically in line there, or yeah, the eating behaviors of the family all were very similar. I think, you know, based on my parents and where they grew up and how they grew up, how they ate and how we ate, again, 1970s, 80s, a lot of cake, a lot of cookies, a lot of chips. Kool-Aid was, I mean, I drank so many glasses of Kool-Aid every day with not unsweetened Kool-Aid, like tons of sugar. We drank iced tea with sugar in it. Everything had sugar in it. So I don't know if it just hadn't affected my parents yet, because earlier in their life, that's not how they were eating. I'm not sure how, but definitely we did not just follow along a, yes, the parents struggle with their weight, and yes, so do the kids. It was very different. Mm. But I had two grandmothers who were both type 2 diabetic. And I remember from a young age, someone saying, it's genetic, but it skips a generation. And so I was kind of doing that little configuration in my head. And I said, oh, great, that probably means me. I think in some way, I always then accepted, like I expected that I was going to be diabetic. I struggled with my weight as a teenager, in college, young adult. And then I eventually was diagnosed in my early 30s with diabetes. And it was one of those fluke diagnoses that I had to point out because the doctor didn't even test for it. Mm. And I think, you know, sometimes people wonder, why wouldn't a doctor be testing for that at the time? And one of the reasons I think is I don't think I was exhibiting certain symptoms that she was looking for. So she didn't even think to test for it. I think sometimes doctors are more likely to test for it at a certain range of weight. And although I was well overweight, and on some scales would qualify as even morbidly obese, depending on what write-up you were looking at, I don't think she thought about that or was concerned about that. But I asked at an appointment, I said, well, do you think this could be type 2 diabetes? And she said, well, let's see. So we did just the glucometer finger prick test there in the office. And my blood sugar that day was 318.
Wow.
And she said, yeah, let's take a sample and let's get some real testing done. So when I was diagnosed, my HbA1c was over 13. And she said, well, we'll give you a month to see if you can change anything just through diet. And then we'll start putting medications in the mix. So for the next few years, I just went on one medication after the next, and really for about 14 years, took a lot of medications, took other medications, not just diabetic medications, but was put on a statin, was put on an ACE inhibitor to try to protect my heart, was put on something else to try to protect my kidney. So I was taking just a handful of prescriptions every day.
Often just starts this cascade, isn't it? You take one kind of medication, then you have to take another medication to prevent the problems that the first one, and so on and so on.
Absolutely.
And so on, until you just end up with a ridiculous number.
Absolutely. So here I was, you know, I think 32, and I was on three diabetic medications. I was on a statin. I was on a heart medication. You know, I thought, I'm like on a list of medications that I would think of for a 75-year-old or something. Like, this isn't good. But I was also naive and stubborn. I didn't change what I was doing. I didn't want to change how I was eating. I continued eating Pop-Tarts and cookies and all kinds of things that, you know, obviously were horrible for me. That went on for years. And my weight went up and down quite a bit. I did, you know, lots of fad diets and lots of attempts to lose weight. And I would lose 30 or 40 pounds and then gain 50 or 60 pounds and then lose it. And it, you know, you could probably go back and look through pictures and see every 5 to 10 years a great change up and down. And then it was about 5 years ago, I started with the Whole 30. And that was just kind of life-changing for me. I read the book, chose to start March 1st, 2014, life changed. If you're familiar with it, it's very much a pretty severe elimination diet for me, kind of eliminated most of the things I really enjoyed eating.
Quite a few people seem to start there, actually. It's a common starting place.
Uh-huh. I share this with folks that I work with all the time that a lot of people, when they do the Whole 30, they lose quite a bit of weight. And one of the things they ask you in doing this program is that you not weigh yourself for 30 days and then, you know, that it's not focused on the weight and that you just do what you're doing and then see at the end. So I did not weigh for 30 days. I did it spot on. I did not eat one bite of something that was not really allowed on the program. And I was so excited because I had joined several groups and people said, I lost 24 pounds in 30 days and I lost 17 pounds. And I was so excited. I got on the scale at the end of the 30 days and I had lost 4 pounds.
Oh, no. I mean, 4 pounds is great. 4 pounds is 4 pounds, but I understand how you were feeling.
But from that motivation place where, yeah, you know, you've kind of given up everything you thought you were, that eating was fine. Yeah, it was a little frustrating, but I had already made a decision prior to that because more than just losing some weight and doing some things, I knew that I needed to change my relationship with food and I needed to change my health. And I knew 30 days was not going to be enough to really do any of that. And I knew that the behavior change wasn't going to be solid for me. There were times in that 30 days where I thought, okay, day 31, what am I going to eat? And of course, in the actual plan, the days after you start adding back in some food groups to see how you respond. So you may do a day with dairy to see if dairy is causing you a problem. So of course, though, in my mind, I'm thinking day 31, I'll eat pizza and ice cream, and then the next day I'll go get this. So I already had determined I was going to go longer than the 30 days. So I actually did a whole 100. So I stayed on the very strict elimination for 100 days. And at the end of the 100 days, I had lost like 20, 22 pounds. So I felt better about that. Mm. But also I had really changed how I ate in a sustainable way. So that was the biggest benefit of it. And during that time, I had come off one of my medications, one of my diabetic medications. My blood sugar was much more controlled.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, see if you saw some change there. And remind me, what exactly it entails, the Whole 30. I do know some people who've done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's whole foods basically, isn't it? But there's quite a few things that aren't in it. And there's quite mm-hmm. a few things from a keto perspective that are in it. What's the general basis?
It's whole food and it's paleo based. Mm. I used to talk about it of what I didn't eat. So it's no grains. It's no soy, no sugar or sweeteners, no dairy, no alcohol, and I might be leaving something else out, but there were five or six main categories of things that you eliminate. And then after I finished the Whole 30, I started to add back in a few things. Oh, I know. At the time when I did it, there were no potatoes. They've since updated it and there are potatoes. But when I began changing how I was eating after the Whole 100, I added back in potatoes. And I added in some sweetener. So I would use honey or coconut sugar. So it was really kind of natural sugars. And obviously, and fruit was still very common. So for me, that was just too many carbohydrates for my system and my blood sugar and things. So eventually, after about another year and a half, I realized I needed to change again. I needed to lower the carbohydrates, which is why I then went more toward keto. And one of the things that I struggle with sometimes in all of this is that we have to kind of label it something. Mm. And I think sometimes we all get so caught up on the labels and these kind of lines between the labels. And for use or ease of discussion, I think it's important to have those labels. But I think they can also be really limiting. So people are like, well, that's not keto or, you know, but it's a whole food. Is it paleo? Is it primal? Is it keto? But I would say even now I do keto. So I do very low carb, but I eat some potatoes and I eat some things that the keto police would probably tell me I shouldn't be doing. But I believe in a little more variability if your body can handle that, if you have the metabolic flexibility to add in healthy whole foods, I'm all for that.
Yes, I agree. I think, and it's not just your metabolism, it's your mind. I think that's the that's the big thing, whether, you know, because you might be perfectly capable of dealing with it from a physical point of view. You know, I could eat some potatoes every day, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about potatoes. I think it depends on the processing. I did that experiment, didn't I, with crisps or chips, as you call them, and my blood sugar went insane. But I think whole potatoes might be okay. But from a mental point of view, they're way too addictive for me. So I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it does depend on different things, doesn't it? Whether it's the kind of thing that you can bring in or not.
Absolutely. And so far for me, potatoes are a great example. I feel good. I eat them like once a week. So it's not every day. It's not every meal. And I feel good after the meal. My blood sugars are good. Ketones are good. And I don't have an increased craving for them or an onslaught of carb creep where I want to eat more carbohydrates. Now that's different. If I added in sugar, that's a whole different story. Mm. Obviously, my blood sugar is not going to do well with that, but also my mind is not going to do well with that. Once I have that, I want more. And, you know, it just unravels from there. But so far, potatoes have been very manageable for me.
I think it's an interesting one because I've heard other people talking in a similar way, either about white potatoes or sweet potatoes. And I just wonder, what do you feel the benefits of doing that? Because some people would say, oh, well, why bother? If it's something that's quite carby and you're generally keto, why would you bother? Is it because it's something you quite like, so that's why? Or is it something that you feel there's a noticeable benefit from having that particular food? Mm. You know, I have heard people discussing that actually bumping their blood sugar up just a little bit. We're not talking about a pizza type carb up here,
mm-hmm.
but especially women, just bumping it a little bit with a small amount of sweet potato or something, they feel better doing that. So I just wonder what the reasons are that you found that bringing that particular food in is beneficial for you.
That's a great question. And for me, it's not because I was just dying to have potatoes again. It wasn't that, you know, oh, please let me just eat potatoes again.
That's what it would be for me. So you can see why there's that mental problem.
Sure. I think for me, it was more, I think they're healthy. I think there's some benefit to eating foods like that. And again, if they work with your body, I think it's good to eat on occasion. And again, keto for several years now and do fasting and time-restricted eating. I don't think I need to be in ketosis 24/7 in order to be healthy. And so I think some people would say, but if you add in something carby, you're going to get out of ketosis. And I actually think that's fine. And I more have recently been listening to and reading some things about that, that actually there could be some benefit to coming in and out of ketosis at times. And again, I don't mean big week-long binges on sugar or something, but eating a whole food carbohydrate, like I said, potatoes. For some people, it might be rice or beans. I didn't eat much of those before anyway, and so it's not one that I really care to experiment with much. And I don't plan to eat potatoes on a regular basis anymore. When I was paleo, I was eating a sweet potato hash every morning for breakfast. I don't plan to do that. It's not really in my goals. And probably my body may not have that much flexibility, but doing it once a week, I find is really working well for me. And what some people find by doing that kind of natural carb up, like you said, it's not like, okay, on Sunday, you get to have a hot fudge Sunday. That actually it moves them on whatever their marker, their needle is. It helps them with breaking a stall or keeping the weight loss going or their blood sugar management. So what everyone fears is going to happen is that it's going to derail their progress. And for some people, actually having some carbs here and there actually can help them. And again, I think it really depends on what carbs you're talking about. I don't villainize all carbohydrates, but like I said, I know that would not be the same for me if I did a binge day on sugar. I don't think that's going to help me with weight or with diabetic health.
I find it absolutely fascinating. You know, it's a question that comes up a lot, asking guests what their keto looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because the point I'm trying to get across from that is that everybody's keto looks a bit different. And for listeners at home, to be thinking one week when somebody's talking about the health benefits of a particular type of keto and it's completely different from theirs, and they're thinking, oh, maybe, you know, maybe they're thinking I'm doing it wrong or something along those lines, but they felt that it's working for them. To hear so many different stories, so many different versions of keto, I think is fantastic, as well as absolutely fascinating. And as you know, I've recently spoken to April.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that worked for her was to go super high fat, you know, fat to protein 2-1. And that's the only thing that's worked for her. And she's tried everything. And yet you'll get someone another week saying they have to keep their fat at much more of a moderate, even a low level for it to work for them.
Absolutely. And to me, you've just touched on probably one of my biggest focuses, if that's the word, the thing I focus on most in my mind about all of this is in all the Facebook groups I've been in over the years, in working with IDM now, that so many of us are so hungry for information that once we read someone's post or we hear a podcast episode that it looks like this, some of us are very prone to think that that's what we have to do. So someone might listen to what my keto looks like and say, well, it worked for her. That's what keto has to look like. And the reality is it has to look different for every person. People get so locked into, they say 20 grams of carbs. Well, you may be someone who could have 40 grams of carbs or 50, or you might be someone who can only have 12. You know, it's really going to vary by person. I don't do a lot of dairy. Some people, dairy is kind of a mainstay in how they do keto. So I think I hesitate a little bit in getting into some detail sometimes because I know some people are looking so much for the answer for them that they latch onto things and think that's what they have to do. And one of the things so many of your guests have talked about, which is so important, I think, is that we all have to keep exploring what works for our body. And not to expect that what works this month is going to be how we're going to be doing it in a year, because our bodies will respond differently as well.
Mm. Fascinating. And I think we touched on it just then, the whole protein fat debate. And I think it's one of the hottest potatoes debates in the community, just to put on a pun there. But I think you are one of these people who moderates their protein a little bit. Am I right with that? And you find that that's something that works for you. I'd just be interested in hearing a little bit more about that, because a number of guests talk about, and it can even come up, I think it was one of the top tips recently, that we shouldn't worry about protein. We shouldn't worry about moderating. We can eat as much as we like and it's fine. And for some people, that's absolutely true. But I know that's not necessarily the case for you. So I'd be really interested in hearing about how you arrived at the balance that you're at now. As you said, things change.
And it's also, it touches on this other piece for me. I joke that I'm not an ideal patient, and I'm probably not an ideal self-scientist, because oftentimes I don't do the, you know, five steps to find out. So I didn't do 2 months of lower protein and measure everything, and then do 2 months of higher protein and measure. I just know that for me, doing the lower end of the continuum of recommended protein amount is helpful. It's helped me manage my blood sugar. It's helped me manage my weight. I have not really tried high protein or higher protein. I know when I lowered it, some things improved. So again, not a great scientist on this. And I think when people say, you know, don't worry about protein, it's in response to the big debate. And some people are so fearful about it and so anti-protein in some ways. But for me, I kind of equate it back to long roundabout way here, but like Michaela Peterson and carnivore. And from what I understand, you know, finding that plant products were so problematic for her body. It would be like me saying, well, don't worry about plant products. They're fine. Just stop worrying about it. That's not true for everyone. And she's a great example. For her, not worrying about plant products didn't work. And so I think even just to say that, you know, no one should worry about protein, it's not a problem, it just isn't accurate. It may be for a large portion of folks, we don't need to worry about it. But I think there are quite a few of us that actually have to look at it and really make some decisions about the level.
And we're not talking about going super low here, are we? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know that you need, it's the macro that you do need a minimum.
Absolutely.
There is a minimum for it. It's not the same as carbohydrates, where going super low can be great. That's not the case with protein. But there can be an argument for saying, well, I just need to keep it within this more moderate range.
And I feel comfortable. I most days probably eat 50, 55 grams of protein. So it's not the super low end. And like you said, it's not like I'm trying to go no protein. I feel like I've reached a pretty good balance for me at this stage. You know, oftentimes, even as we age, some people require more protein. And so it may change. But I feel good about that. And I often find in working with clients, protein is one that as they try to navigate a keto way of eating or a paleo way of eating early on, they often are pretty high in protein. And if they're struggling, if they're not losing weight or their blood sugar isn't coming down, if those are their goals, that's one of the things I would encourage them to try. See how you do on the lower end of the spectrum.
And that, again, that's what it comes down to, is trying it to try and find out what works for you. And so when did you get interested in and start exploring fasting? Because obviously, as well as changing your health and what you ate, getting involved in fasting had a big influence on what's happened with your life in general and your career.
Absolutely.
So how did you get started with that?
After I had switched from paleo to doing more of a ketogenic way of eating. A couple months into that, I was part of the Two Keto Dudes group, and everyone in there, in the moderators, we were all talking about fasting, and many of them were fasting. You know, I started to do a little bit of reading on it and was curious. So I thought, well, I want to see if I can fast. And of course, it was something I never could have imagined before. When I was type 2 diabetic, I could eat and be so full that I was in pain And within a few minutes, I was already thinking about when I was going to eat next and what I was going to have. Like, yeah. It was constant.
What is up
hunger.
With that when yeah. you eat the wrong, in quotation marks, food?
That's, absolutely.
It's crazy that you can be so stuffed and then, what can I eat now?
Yeah. It was like I had no limits. And so, you know, I started doing some fasting, but I had already been doing time-restricted eating as far as like an 18-6, fasting for 18 hours and then eating 6 hours later. So an 18-6 window. And then I thought, well, I'm going to try some extended fasts. So I started with 3-day fasts. I did a few 4-day. I did a couple of 5-day. And the fact for me to imagine myself as someone who I never could think of going more than a few hours without eating, that I could go 5 days without eating, it was amazing. And of course, I saw tons of benefit to my blood sugar, to my weight. At this point, I had come off all of my diabetic medication. So I was no longer taking any prescription medications, and I was managing my blood sugar in really healthy ranges. So I wasn't just off the medication, but still having really high blood sugar. Like I was really in a really healthy range.
That must have felt amazing to get rid of that great number that you were taking.
Oh, yeah. And as so many people talk about, and as we kind of poke at so often, I think, in this community, yes, I had this progressive chronic disease that was gone. Mm. And not because I took more medication. It was gone because I changed what I was putting, the inputs in my body. And that was really powerful. And so fasting became pretty normal for me. I would do, again, the 18-6 all the time. And then I would do a 3-day, usually about once a month. Currently, I don't do as many of the longer fasts. I do more of the time-restricted eating and an occasional 24 or 36. I might do a week of some 42s, but I'm not at a point right now where I'm doing as much fasting as when I was kind of focused on the goal of fixing my blood sugar or losing weight. So now it's more of a maintenance type of fasting.
Mm. With that, every now and then going a little bit longer to get the different benefits you can pull from it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I've wanted to talk with you about this for a while. And it's something that doesn't come up much. And it's something that people think never happens. But you ran into problems after, presumably, this was one of your long fasts and things went a bit wrong.
Yeah.
Perhaps you could tell us about that, because it was, I can remember how scary it was at the time.
Yeah, it was rough.
And how confusing as well.
I had been fasting for about a year at this point. And again, maybe a 3-day once a month. As I said, a couple of longer ones. So I did a 3-day fast and I felt fine. Fast went well. And by this point, I thought fasting was easy. If I decided to do 3 days, that was easy. And what I know in hindsight is that fasting is not just something you say, oh, I'm just going to not eat. That there are actually things that you have to pay attention to, and there are ways to do it in a safe way, in a smart way. And unfortunately, I just was kind of cavalier about it and just said, well, I'm just going to fast again. So what happened is at the end of the 3-day fast, I was getting ready to break the fast, and I just started feeling weird. Couldn't really put my finger on what was going on, but it just didn't feel right. And then got some symptoms that were really not right. And by now, I was kind of not in the mindset to eat. And I started getting really achy. Like, I felt like I had been run over by a Mack truck. I remember I bent down to pick up something in the kitchen, and my shoulders and back, like, hurt so bad. I was, like, wincing in almost in tears. So I was very much in pain. My legs were hurting. Started feeling nauseous, dizzy, eventually was throwing up, very, I would say, a lot of brain confusion, like just feeling out of it. I felt like I had a really bad flu, very intense intestinal flu. And it went on throughout the night, and in the morning, finally decided I needed to go to the hospital. I did eat something, and I even ate something with carbs because I thought maybe I just need some carbohydrate to, maybe something's wrong here. Now, of course, I had been testing my blood sugar because one of the things I was concerned about was my ketones were very high. And so one of the things I was concerned about is, could this be ketoacidosis? Which is, of course, what most doctors, when they first hear you say ketosis, get panicked that you're in ketoacidosis, which we know are two totally separate things.
Exactly. And most of us have seen that comparison and thought, yeah, that's something that just doesn't happen. If you have a functioning pancreas, it's not going to happen to us.
Yeah.
But.
And so I was testing and my blood sugar was fine, actually. It was under 100. It was actually good for me. And I knew at that point I couldn't even drive. And again, wasn't thinking super clearly. So I took an Uber to the hospital, got to the hospital, and I was writhing in pain when I got there.
Wow.
So it was hard to even, like, fortunately in the ER, there was no one waiting. So I just walked right in. And the guy was taking my vitals and talking to me about what was going on, but I was like writhing in pain and just out of it. So they took me back right away. And I was admitted to the hospital and stayed for a couple of days. And what we found out is that my electrolytes were so off. And they referred to it as metabolic acidosis. So a little bit different than ketoacidosis in that my blood sugar was not high. So in ketoacidosis, you have very high ketones and very high blood sugar. I did not have the high blood sugar. But still, it's a very dangerous situation. Your body being that acidic, things are going to start going very wrong. So it was good that I went to the hospital when I did. I had IVs. And of course, you know, I just needed the pain to stop. But I remember cringing inside because I knew they were giving me glucose in the IV, but I needed to get out of this predicament. So I stayed in the hospital for a couple of days. It took a couple of days to get my electrolytes to the levels that they were willing to let me go. And when they were talking about electrolytes, this is more sciencey than I was aware and what I can really even speak of intelligently now. But it wasn't just, you know, do you have enough sodium and do you have enough magnesium? And it was other things, the bicarbonate level. They test some ratios of different things, your phosphorus and all these things. So it was more in depth on the electrolyte scale than I would know how to look at. But what really was problematic is that I had not been doing well at managing my electrolytes. I was dehydrated, which obviously is a problem, and my electrolytes were completely out of whack. So to me, the important lesson for me and that I try to share with others is fasting isn't a magnificent tool. I love fasting, and I think we have to respect it and know how to do it and take care, good care of ourselves to maximize the benefit without the risks.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how an experience like that could potentially knock your confidence in fasting. But also then once you get through that and figure out maybe what went wrong or the steps you could do in the future to prevent it happening again, actually would become a very valuable experience to have had, not only for yourself, but for helping other people.
Absolutely. And since then, learning so many things that had I known this, I would have stopped here. Mm. Had I known this, I would have done this. And so I think, again, knowledge is power. And there were definitely things I could have done differently to prevent this from happening or catch it early enough to prevent the severity of it that I had to be in the hospital for it. So this is what I try to teach people.
And I know everyone's different, but what were those points? What were those points that if you could go back and be with yourself at that point, you would have said, oh, hold on, that's a red flag there. Mm-hmm. Let's keep an eye on that. And when the next one comes up, you refer to those things that had you known what you know now. What were those points that you should have been a bit more aware and have done something?
I would simplify it even in that there probably weren't even points. There was probably one point when I should have made a different decision. And that is when my ketones started to go too high.
And what's too high?
Usually recommended to stop at about 6.5. So I am someone who creates a lot of ketones. When people say, oh, you know, I can, even after I fast for a day, my ketones are only 0.6. I just keep my mouth shut oftentimes because after a day, mine could be 4.8, 5.3, and people get irritated with that.
Me too, actually. I can get high ketones fairly easily. So I guess there is an element of context there.
Absolutely.
It depends what your range is.
Absolutely. But as our ketones get higher, our electrolyte balance can be affected. We can become acidic, which is what happened to me. And so had I known that, I would have stopped. I could have checked my ketones. Once they were at 6.5, I could have eaten. I could have broken my fast. So I could have averted all of that from happening. The day that I went into the hospital, I don't remember what my initial reading was. It was like 9.5 or 10. It was very high ketones.
Well, high, yeah.
So I know that now. But you mentioned the confidence thing, and I definitely think it shook my confidence. I stopped doing extended fasting. I hadn't done one for probably a year and a half or so until this year, again, started to fast and do some extended fasting. But I had done a lot of shorter, frequent fasts. So I did a lot of weeks with 3 42-hour fasts, and I love that protocol. And I think part of my decision in doing that was I was afraid to do an extended fast. I was very afraid of ever experiencing that again.
Not surprisingly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you talked about electrolytes and it being way more complicated than just making sure you were taking the regular electrolytes. But presumably, and that's something you hear so often, you hear Megan talking about the importance of electrolytes. Presumably that is another preventative thing you can do just to help you get through a fast a bit easier, is just to be taking electrolytes and keeping reasonably well hydrated.
Absolutely. And I know that was not something I was doing during that fast. Mm-hmm. As I looked back, I knew I hadn't been looking at it at all. And I have found more recently that it's not only when we're fasting that we should be paying attention to electrolytes, but almost anyone, when you're doing a very low carb way of eating, electrolytes are important. I mean, they're important for all of us, but as we lower our insulin levels, our electrolytes, we're at more risk of them being out of whack. And so I don't encourage people just to consume salt or whatever just on fasting days. I think it's important every day to be looking at our electrolyte balance.
And so when did this change come that you decided that this, presumably this growing passion that you had for your own health and well-being and the changes that you'd found so beneficial, to wanting to take that step to share it with others and actually completely, well, not completely, you've changed the course of your career. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's more of a progression, I think, because what you did before and you still do, I think, mm-hmm. works so very well with what you're doing now.
I didn't talk about this in the kind of telling you about my life piece because you already knew it. But so my career up until that time had been as a psychologist in private practice. And one of the things I was finding is my own frustration with my role as a psychologist in I was seeing so many things in people's lives that I thought could be improved with changing the way they ate, but I wasn't in a position to really be encouraging that or teaching that. My clients could tell you that I did talk about it a lot and did encourage it a lot. But you know, when I would listen to people talk about severe anxiety and depression, and I would listen to how they were talking about eating or different things, it just became so incongruent for me to keep trying to focus on it just from a talk therapy approach, that it just no longer fit for me. And so I needed to branch out and do something that was more related to what I believe are some of the underlying pieces of it, and looking at nutrition and things. And at the time, I branched out some to do my own coaching, which was primarily around how to eat. So looking at helping people with ketogenic, paleo, or primal approaches to eating. And around this time, also started talking a lot more with Megan Ramos about IDM and fasting. And I spent some time coaching with Megan. So had Megan as a coach helping me regain my confidence with fasting and do it in a really healthy, safe way. So Megan asked me if I would be interested in joining IDM, a coaching capacity, and it really fits so well with my background, wanting to help people and work with people and changing their lives, but from this other health piece that felt so important to me. So it was just kind of the perfect timing and the perfect, felt more, much more congruent with my own experience and what I wanted to be doing with people.
I can remember thinking at the time when you told me this change was going to happen, that not only is a great fit for you, but what a great addition to their team to have somebody with that experience, with the psychotherapy experience, coming onto their team to be part of the mix. Because as we all know, it's so important, isn't it? The whole mindset, we're going to go on to talk about that later, but it's such an important part of the puzzle.
It is. And I find in general, even in IDM, but I think this is true in a lot of the keto Facebook groups and different things that I'm still involved with, a lot of people come there with a lot of knowledge now. It's not quite as common to hear people say, there's this keto thing. Tell me more about that. Like people come in and they've read these books and they've listened to all these podcasts. They listen to your podcast. So they have some background knowledge. They're not coming in completely green. And the next challenge is, okay, I know all this information, but what do I do with it? How do I make this work for me? How do I undo 40 years of behaviors and ways of thinking about things? So I see in IDM, a lot of the clients that I work with, one of the things they come in with is, Terry, I know the information. I've read the books. I've read the obesity code. I've got it. I know the science enough. I'm just having a hard time really making this a consistent fit in my life and wrapping my mind around it. So for me, it's really exciting because I can rely on that knowledge and then help work with them to get them to that place where they can be more positive about themselves and the approach that they're taking and start to change how they approach it, change their mindset, change the way they think about themselves. I had this client, I met with her yesterday. When I first met with her, I think it was about 6 weeks ago, I remember our first consultation, she came in like so defeated. And she said, look, I've tried everything. I can't do another thing that doesn't work. I can't fail again. And you could just see it. You know, she was so defeated. So I said, okay, well, here's what we would do and here's how it'll look. And so we've met about the past 6 weeks and I met with her yesterday and she was so energized and happy and laughing and talking about how she and her family had just done this 5K run. She said, no, it was walking for me, but you know, 6 weeks prior, she would not have gone to that walk. Listening to her talk about fasting, again, something just like what I had said, she never could have imagined herself going more than 8 hours without eating. And she's done a 48-hour fast just to see this complete shift taking place. It was so exciting. And I had her just stop and I say, do you remember when we first met? She's like, oh, I know. And so it's so exciting for me to get to experience that when people can really take all of this knowledge and feel like they can really incorporate it into making lasting changes in their lives. It's really amazing.
That's so powerful and rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think without getting you to give away all your trade secrets, we're going to talk a bit about what you've just been discussing, that mindset and behavior and how people can maybe find a better approach to help with their own success. But we're going to do it later because we've run out of time and you've actually got to go away and meet with some of those clients. So we're going to come back for a part two where we're going to discuss that. So thank you so much for sharing your story today.
That sounds great. I'm really excited to talk about the next part. Again, just from my own experience and what I'm experiencing with clients and to talk about some new things that are coming that I think are going to be really helpful for people. So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking more.
Absolutely. I'll see you later.
All right. Thanks, Daisy.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_ketowoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Arthur Ashe. Start where you are. Use what you have. Do what you can. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.